You're with Raf Epstein on ABC Radio Melbourne.
We have spent some time in recent weeks and months focusing on the seats that don't get attention, the non-marginal seats that get neglected by both of the major parties. Not today. The Sandbelt seats are focused on for a very good reason. The seats that go along the Frankston train line, Bentley, Mordialloc, Carrum, Frankston, they have been won by the party that forms government at the last four elections. That's why you will hear so much focus tomorrow night on Bentley, Mordialloc, Carrum and Frankston. They have been the deciding factor. They have been won by the party forming government at the last four elections. In this half hour, we will check in on the seat of Bentley. It has gone with the government. Listen to this statistic. This is why Bentley is considered a bellwether. Bentley has gone with the government at 13 of the last 15 elections since it was first contested in 1967. You might love Bentley, you might hate it. My grandparents used to live there and I spent some of my teenage years in Bentley. Either way, at 13 of the last 15 elections, Bentley's gone with the government. So, we'll have a close look at the seat of Bentley. I was driving through it last night. There were significant, expensive Labor Party billboards everywhere I looked. There are significant, expensive level crossings. They've made a big commitment on education as well. Labor has thrown everything but the kitchen sink at a seat that it holds by just hundreds of votes. So I'll have a chat to the major parties in Bentley and find out what their feeling is on the ground. And it all comes with the backdrop, of course, of some rather significant opinion polls in both of our town's newspapers. They have the Labor Party ahead of the coalition 54-46 or 53-47 on a two-party preferred basis. That is not the news the opposition wanted last night and this morning and for the final gist of the campaign. We'll get to Bentley very soon.
Call 1300 222 774 or text 0437 774 774. You're with Raf Epstein on ABC Radio Melbourne.
But look, something happened while we've all had our minds and our media and our attention focused on this state election campaign. Something happened yesterday. The Labor Party came out with pretty much most of the detail of their energy policy federally. This stuff's important. This is crucial to the future of your electricity bill. It's crucial to the future of the climate globally as well. But you know what, Australia? We're in a weird place. We're in a really weird place. The Prime Minister's approach is ad hoc and extreme. Now, that is not me calling Scott Morrison's approach ad hoc and extreme. It is those rabid socialists at the Business Council of Australia. Those esteemed representatives at the big end of town think that Scott Morrison's approach to energy, where they can force energy companies to sell assets, like selling off old coal plants in the vague hope that someone will buy them, the Business Council thinks that approach is ad hoc and extreme. These are the people who are supposed to be in the trenches with the coalition fighting at the ramparts at a federal election campaign. And the opposition leader, Bill Shorten, this was significant yesterday. His approach, his policy was drawn up by Malcolm Turnbull. The Labor opposition federally are adopting the National Energy Guarantee, an approach that was drawn up with blood, sweat and tears over almost a year by the current Liberal Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg. So we're in a weird place, Australia. Keeping all of that in mind, let's talk about the C word. It pops up all the time with energy. Coal. Mark Thurber joins us. He's the Associate Director of the Program on Energy and Sustainable Development at Stanford University in the United States. He has been visiting Monash University this week to discuss his forthcoming book, imaginatively titled Coal. Mark, how are you going?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Raf.
Why'd you call the book Coal?
Well, you know, there was a series on resources and they already had coffee and timber and oil and coal was one of the ones that was left.
Is coal over? Is it finished?
No. Certainly not. In a way, our life would be much easier if coal was finished. Coal brings a lot of environmental challenges, local air pollution in many emerging countries, and also climate change. But we've got plenty of coal left, and it looks like people are going to use it for some time.
So it's going to be a significant part. When I turn on my light switch, turn on my television, I'm going to be part of that's going to be coal for what, next few decades at least?
Most likely. You know, and Australia's situation is different from China's and India's, is different from Bangladesh, is different from the United States. But it'll be here for some time around the world.
Is it the cheapest or the most expensive form of energy?
It's the cheapest, by and large, with some exceptions. Actually, North America is an exception where natural gas is now cheaper than coal. So that's one of the places in the world where coal is phasing out.
Whenever I've looked at it, or to be honest, actually, when the last three prime ministers have looked at coal, and I know Bloomberg New Energy Finance put out some figures yesterday, if you want to build a new coal-fired power plant, that's the most expensive form of energy, isn't it?
Coal is very expensive to build up front. But still, even when you build in all those costs, in many countries, it's not the most expensive. You know, if you look at different energy sources, coal is very expensive to build your power plant, but the fuel is quite cheap.
Sure, sure. Natural, just has an expensive output.
Exactly, yeah. that many places don't take into account, don't price all the pollution.
Can I ask you about
sure,
the price?
Sure, of course, yeah.
The IPCC report, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, I don't want to reduce a very complex document to something too simple, however I will. They essentially said if we have coal in the second half of the century, 99% of the world's coral reefs will be significantly affected. They were recommending a carbon price. I just wonder, do you think that's actually going to happen? I mean, is most of the world going to have either an implicit or explicit carbon price on its energy?
Well, you know, I think Australia illustrates some of the challenges, right? You had a pretty good one, and then it disappeared. Although at least I guess people are talking about all these policies in Australia more than they are in many places.
But make a prognostication for me, because I mean, I can't see one coming in the United States soon. I just wonder if you think do the force of numbers and facts mean we'll get one, or are there other ways to get to the same goal?
So I think a carbon price has to be part of the solution to climate change mitigation. So I think, you know, one way or the other, we have to get to carbon pricing all around the world, and maybe the levels are different, but we, you know, it's just we can't deal with the problem without it. There are many other things that can help, you know, technology development, developing renewables, but a carbon price has to be an important piece.
Mark Thurber is with me. He's from Stanford University. He's got a forthcoming book titled Coal. How are we doing, Australia? We sort of, where do we rank in terms of meeting the energy challenge and the emissions challenge? How are we doing?
Yeah. Well, so there are different ways you can look at it. Australia and the United States, if your metric is the carbon emissions per capita, our two countries are among the very worst. You know, I think, though, where Australia is doing well is having the debate. Politicians certainly pay attention to this, and it has real impacts.
Do you think it's a productive debate? To many of us involved in chairing that debate, it feels like we go in circles.
Yeah, well, I think from the Prime Minister turnover, that one could certainly make that argument. Yeah. Although, as I was saying the other night, many of us in our country are quite jealous of your turnover of leadership and wouldn't mind getting some of that magic in our country. So you're right. I mean, it's, you know, it's a very difficult debate. And I think Australia is in a very interesting position because, you know, you're on an energy basis, the world's largest coal exporter. So there are, you know, very real economic interests that benefit from coal and jobs and all of that. And yet it's also a country that's doing quite a lot on renewables. I mean, so South Australia, but many other places as well. So, you know, I think it's a country where, you know, really the rubber is hitting the road in some sense.
So do we get a pass, Mark? Do we get more than 5 out of 10 in your...
I think you do. I'll give you a 6.
Okay, yeah, that's nice. That's nice. I like that. Look, I just want to replay one thing. I should point out, I did have the state energy minister on, Lily D'Ambrosio, last week. I've asked a number of times to have the shadow energy minister, David Southwick. That hasn't happened. That's okay. If they don't want to come on, they don't want to come on. I wanted to try and get to the energy issues in this state election campaign. We only got Labor's view. That's okay. We did go down to Morwell, which is, of course, the site of the Hazelwood power plant that has now been closed down. Wanted to replay this exchange. The National Party policy in this state is to build a high energy low emissions coal-fired power plant in the Latrobe Valley. My question to the Nationals candidate in Morwell, of course, was, well, who's actually going to build a brand new coal-fired power station? Here's part of the exchange with Sheridan Bond, the Nationals candidate for Morwell.
There is private investment interest in it. Of course, there has been discussions held at
a higher
level.
So we just trust you. So we've just got to trust you that there's somebody interested in investing in a coal-fired power station?
Well, these companies, of course, want to remain confidential at this stage. They're not going to come out when there's all this talk.
Can I put it to both of you that there's absolutely zero chance of anybody investing in coal-fired power when it's the most expensive form of power in the country?
I would disagree with you.
She disagrees with me. Who's right, Mark? Is anyone going to build a coal-fired power station in this country, do you think? Go on,
I don't know. Well, I mean, if I were an Australian power developer, that would not be my choice.
Why not?
Because I think in a country like Australia, the long-term risk that climate policy will get tighter is high, right? And so, even when the carbon tax went away, the government's changed and the carbon tax went away in Australia, that doesn't remove the possibility that it'll come back.
Yeah.
And so to me, that would be quite a risky economic decision. So I wouldn't make that choice.
And if I can ask you one more detailed question, I did, because I love looking at these things, Bloomberg New Energy Finance put out some numbers yesterday, and they are now saying that even wind and solar without a subsidy in Australia are substantially cheaper than coal, and that it's still cheaper even when you add storage to wind and solar. That's still cheaper than building a new coal-fired power plant or significantly investing in an old one. So that's one, that's one group of experts. Do you think they're roughly right?
Well, so costs of wind and solar have come down enormously. And certainly, for some time, there have been parts of the world where wind is competitive on cost and solar is getting there. That's certainly possible in some places. The biggest challenge of wind and solar going forward is the intermittency issue with it. So they're only there when the sun is shining and the wind is blowing. And especially as you start to get to higher and higher shares of renewables,
you need a bigger battery.
You need a bigger battery, and you need a battery that lasts longer than any batteries last. And so, California, where I'm from, is very much going to face this issue. So we have a goal of getting to 50% renewable generation by 2026 to 60% by 2030. And one of the biggest issues is going to be, if you look at California, and most regions have some kind of issue like this, the wind peak is in the summer, and it's about four times higher than the amount of wind you get at the trough in winter. Solar is also much higher in summer than in winter. So batteries are a part of the solution. Batteries are great for taking electricity you generate from solar during the day and using at night. But the seasonal variation is a whole different order of problem. And as we start to get to, more than 20%, more than 30%, more than 50%, that's really going to bite. And that's where a lot of technological advancement is needed so that we can find cost-effective ways of storing energy for a very long time.
Thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate your expertise.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you, Raf.
Mark Thurber, he is the Associate Director of the Program on Energy and Sustainable Development at Stanford University, and he's been at Monash Uni talking about his forthcoming book, delightfully titled Coal.